One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hills, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Come get some. IGN Games Scoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Games Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This program today will be a little bit different than the scoop you're regularly used to. Usually, we attempt to run down all the latest video game news, but ultimately, inevitably, end up talking about retro games for 30 minutes. But today, I have assembled the hosts of each of our platform-specific podcasts, the heads of all of our houses here at IGN.
You come to me for a favor,
yeah.
Damon.
And we're going to sort of...
heads of five.
Oh, no.
One day.
We're going to sort of compare and contrast, just like we did in elementary school, how all the platforms did this year. It's not necessarily to sort of determine a winner, although we'll see at the end if there is an obvious choice for who had the best 2019. But without any further ado, I'm joined this week by Jonathan Dornbush, host of Podcast Beyond.
Beyond.
Casey DeFritas from Nintendo Voice Chat.
Hello.
And Ryan McCaffrey, of course, from Podcast Unlocked.
Howdy.
And they'll each be sort of representing the specific platforms that they follow so closely. But of course, I want to hear everyone weigh in on all the other platforms and how we think everybody did this year. The year of our games, 2019. So we're going to randomly pick who goes first.
Okay.
Ooh. I have a random number generator.
Oh,
so
no.
Let's say, right. So 1 through 3, let's say Jonathan, let's say, you be number one.
Aww. Okay.
Casey will be number
finally.
Two.
PS4.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go in sales order.
And Ryan.
It's fitting.
Ryan will be number three.
Okay.
I will now generate who will go first, and the lucky winner is... three. We'll start with Xbox.
All right.
Let's begin with Xbox. The Xbox One.
Yeah, let's
one.
Do it.
Was 2019 a good year to own an Xbox One?
Next question.
Oh my gosh. Don't be
no,
too hard.
It's, no, no, see, here's the thing. Obviously, the first party situation with Xbox is well known at this point. They've bought all these studios. They're trying to fix that, which I think we're going to talk about later mm-hmm. with 2020 stuff. But yeah, 2019... You know, so we've published, as of this recording, we've published our nominees mm-hmm. for Game of the Year mm-hmm. and our various categories. And for Best Xbox Exclusive, there was one nominee mm-hmm. and thus a winner. A very, very deserving
sure.
year
yes.
five,
yeah.
I might add.
Year five.
I think no matter how, if we'd had 17 first-party exclusives, we're not doing third parties in those categories anymore, the exclusive category. So it is exclusives. Gears 5 was a tremendous game. I reviewed it myself, and I love the series, and the Coalition is just, I'm amazed at how they've not only continued to keep Gears being such a great game, but I'd say it's honestly probably the best first party narrative driven game Microsoft has, even ahead of Halo, because Halo 5 really Drop the Ball, which we've talked about extensively on Unlocked. Looking forward to Infinite, but it's been a long way. Halo 5 was 2015. We've gotten two Gears games in that time, 4 and 5.
It's crazy.
They've both been amazing. The other big release for Xbox on the exclusive side this year, of course, was early in the year with Crackdown 3, and that game just wasn't very good.
Sure.
You know, it had been quite the development hell. It had been announced years and years ago, and when it did finally come around, its whole cloud-powered destruction tech just wasn't. It just didn't really make for a good game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty thin year. That said, the Xbox One X, fairly, I would say, objectively, the best place to play third-party games that are enhanced with 4K level additions. I mean, we saw it with the end of the last year with Red Dead Redemption 2, just noticeably better on the Xbox One X than the PS4 Pro. And so, yeah, if you had an Xbox One X and a 4K TV, you had a really good time playing the likes of Control and Resident Evil 2 Remake and all the other great third-party games we got this year.
Sure. And even technical performance aside from all those third-party games, the services that the Xbox One X or just the Xbox One family offers now with Game Pass, Ultimate Game Pass is... You know, arguably the best deal going in gaming.
I think,
Game Pass is really great.
In 5 years, I think we'll look back and go, wait, did this used to be a thing we didn't, we didn't have with every console?
Game Pass is
going to be a standard.
Yeah, it's industry changing. And especially when they were running that deal earlier this year, which I think they've done since of like, get your first month for $1. I immediately added Game Pass to my Xbox Live subscription. It's amazing to have so many great games of such a scale. You get so many great undiscovered indie gems and AAA games just right at your fingertips.
Jonathan, your first taste is free. Just $1.
Then a little bit more.
All,
not too bad.
All first-party games arrive day one on Game Pass. Is that
correct?
Right?
So that means so Gears 5.
Gears 5 was there.
You did not have to buy it if you were a subscriber.
Does that make it hard to judge its success?
Yeah, because Microsoft's not giving out definitive metrics. Like, we don't know how many Game Pass subscribers there are. We don't know how many people play each game. So
they stopped even announcing hardware sales.
Yeah, a while ago. So it is tough to know. But the fact that we're seeing big third-party games go more and more to the service indicates to me that it's successful enough that it's working.
Yeah,
you know, we had The Outer Worlds on there on day one, which granted that's sort of a weird situation, which we don't have to get into, where it's kind of a Microsoft game, but kind of not.
Yeah.
But, you know, stuff like Devil May Cry 5 made it on there within like 4 or 5 months after its release. So we're starting to see the third parties really jump on board with it as well.
I think Monster Hunter World got on there as well. So there was a lot of reasons to get it. I got it because of The Outer Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, good, and you probably are already feeling like you got your $10 a month worth just from The Outer Worlds, because it's awesome.
You talk about how thin the exclusive lineup was this year, but Gears 5, I think, it's safe to say it was better than any PlayStation 4 exclusive this year?
Of that caliber, there's one PlayStation exclusive that I think is hard to judge against any other game, which is Dreams.
Well, okay.
But
still in early access, right?
It's just ending, sort of like sunsetting its early access availability. But of the other first-party lineup in Sony, I'd say probably Gears stands above.
So I just want to give credit, you know, that they really did put out an excellent
It's first-party so game good. I mean, the campaign's incredible. The story's great. The fact that they've introduced a new generation of characters, like it's totally been like the Force Awakens of the Gears universe, where you bring along the old crew. Hey, here's all the people you love and know and care about, but here's some new people that they're pretty cool too. And it turns out they are pretty cool. And then the multiplayer suite's better than ever with that game. So it's really just a tremendous achievement.
And then on the hardware front for Xbox, we got the Xbox One S All Digital Edition.
Yeah.
Do we have any sense of like, how that is doing, it was received?
There was a story that it was like the number one selling console in the UK during Black Friday week, which, I mean, I'm sure there were very aggressive sales on it, but that's a good thing. I mean, the world is going digital. We saw of course, Xbox One famously, when it was unveiled, it was going to be basically the Steam for consoles, and the world rejected that proposal outright, and Microsoft, of course, had to walk back a lot of their policies and ideas for Xbox One, and they, of course, never recovered. That story's been told a million times, but, you know, we are heading for that future. And, you know, yeah, so it's if you don't need the Blu-ray drive, if you don't want to, if you want to just do all your games digitally and you don't want to watch any 4K Blu-ray movies on the console, then sure, why not save yourself a few bucks and grab the digital edition, because it's literally the same thing otherwise.
Sure.
So we're heading that way, and with 2020 stuff, that's Microsoft seems like they're gonna keep going with that with Lockhart, Project Lockhart. So we'll get to that.
We saw a couple former Xbox exclusives jump over to Nintendo this year with Cuphead and
so good.
Ori and the Blind Forest. Does that affect? I guess do you think that affects the value perception for the Xbox to lose those exclusive games?
I don't, particularly when the timing of it was way after the fact.
Yeah,
Cuphead came out in fall of 2017. So it's been a couple of years. And then Ori came out before that. Yeah, Ori was early 2015, if I remember correctly. So no, I think, and those are games that are so brilliantly suited to the Switch as just handheld games, or even just the general sort of family-friendly Switch audience, so platformers. It's great to have those games on Switch, and it's like, I think a lot of Xbox fans probably double dipped and went ahead and picked it up on Switch as well, because why not? Until xCloud really rolls out and lets you play those on the go, the Switch is the best way to do that.
Yeah, it seems like Microsoft's stated agenda going forward, like obviously they're going to want people to buy Project Scarlet, but they seem to care less about the platform you are playing their games on, so long as you are playing Microsoft games and Xbox games with xCloud, with the cross-play between PC and Xbox, with all of that.
Minecraft continues to get PS4 updates.
Yeah,
just one announced today.
Just had
today.
The cross-play update for PS4.
It's like they're putting their money where their mouth is on that.
Gears 5 also on PC.
Yes.
Halo Reach just came to PC.
Yeah, pretty much everything's PC now. Even Halo Infinite, which is never launched on, you know, it's always been the last Xbox exclusive that never comes to anything else, as far at least day and date.
Yeah.
Infinite's going to be day and date next fall. So yeah, it's PC's part of the ecosystem.
Yeah, let's talk about next fall. How is 2020 looking for Xbox? We'll have the next Xbox Scarlet Lockhart coming.
Yeah, so I actually had to make a list because there were enough. So we just got done sort of lamenting the lack of first party games this year. Now it remains to be seen how many of these games will be good. Mm-hmm. But listen to this. This is how many first party games are almost certainly going to come out. I mean, maybe will some of these get delayed? Maybe, probably, but I think most of these, if not all of them, will come out in 2020 under the Xbox Game Studios umbrella. You've got locked in with a release date, Ori 2, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, in February. Mm-hmm. In March, Bleeding Edge, which is the multiplayer shooter it's not even really a shooter, multiplayer kind of arena-ish combat game.
From Ninja Theory.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah.
In April, Minecraft Dungeons, which don't laugh, like that game actually is super fun.
Looks really cool.
It's like Diablo Minecraft.
Miranda said she really liked it.
Yeah.
She played it.
Yeah, she's very high on that game. And then Wasteland 3, an awesome, you know, awesome looking role-playing game from Brian Fargo and the team at InXile. So that's, you know, 4 months in a row, you're getting a first part. That's probably, if that's ever happened in Xbox history where they've shipped four major first party games in consecutive months, it probably hasn't happened since maybe the early 360 days. And then at some point, you've got Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course, which is a major DLC. It's like an extra island, an extra big chunk of content there. Psychonauts 2 from Double Fine, which will ship on PS4.
Yep.
Not sure if there's a... I can't remember if there's a Switch version
know if
as well.
Switch.
I don't think so.
But yeah, so that... Because that, of course, was started prior to Microsoft buying them. But still, that's an Xbox first-party game. And then in the fall... Or, pardon me, in spring as well... Early access for Grounded, which is the four-player PvE survival game from a small team at Obsidian.
That's like the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids
game. So you've got all that stuff, plus Halo Infinite confirmed as the big AAA day one launch title, a hopeful killer app for Project Scarlet, and then I would bet lunch absolutely that Forza Motorsport 8 will also be a day one launch title, because Forza took a year off. We did for the first time in maybe a decade, or maybe ever, or maybe since Horizon started.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been years since Forza took a year off, so I think we'll get Forza Motorsport 8 showing off the sexy next gen-ness of Scarlet. So you've got, I mean, That's like 8 definitive games, maybe a 9th in there. That's a lot of first-party content in 2020.
I think maybe you forgot one.
I may have.
Battletoads.
You're actually right. Yeah. You're 100% right. I did not write Donut, because I think it doesn't have a release date yet. No. I think that was still spring. Like, spring is the window now, but you're totally right. Yeah. So Battletoads will be in there as well. So, again, we'll see how many of those games are going to be really good. Hopefully all of them. But, next year will be better than this year as far as the output for Microsoft.
Do you have predictions for when the next Xbox will be officially unveiled, announced with a launch window?
I mean, yeah, the question is just, are they going to do an event before E3,
right?
Which they both Sony and Microsoft did last time in 2013. Sony went first in February and Microsoft sat idle till May. And I think in hindsight, they probably wish they hadn't. Granted, many other things went wrong.
Yeah.
But I think that giving Sony those 3 free months of mindshare probably is not something I would expect Microsoft to do again. So if I don't know who will go first, Sony or Microsoft, I don't think any of us can really say that definitively.
I think they're going to be in a bit of a standoff as long as they feasibly can be in their minds.
You might be right, although, you know, Sony's been talking to Wired and some little details. Microsoft stayed pretty quiet so far about Scarlett. But yeah, I think a pre-E3 event is likely, unless they both kind of
wait until
decide
then.
E3 is going to be the big showcase, so who knows.
But I think if one of them goes first before E3, the other will follow shortly after.
Could not agree more. Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, I expect Scarlett to be so the high end, which is Anaconda. So there's two. Project Scarlett is the next gen umbrella under which there is Anaconda, which is the high spec version, and then Lockhart, which is the lower spec version. So I expect the Anaconda to be at least $500. Yeah. I just don't see. That's sort of the baseline that's been established by the Xbox One X. So probably $500 there.
But Xbox is also unique in that it has an upgrade program.
Yeah.
That if you bought an Xbox One X this holiday season, you're sort of...
Yeah, the monthly thing, you got to, if there's a credit check involved, you have to be, you have to show you've got good credit. But it's like, if you do, it's a great way to, you know, take the sting out of spending with tax a good $550, and that's before you even get a single game. So it's Microsoft's doing all the right things. You know, they continue with backwards compatibility, and I should mention the Elite Series 2 controller, which I have at my desk, is great. It's $180. It is a premium controller, but it feels great, plays great, and that is forwards compatible with Scarlett. So you can buy it today, guaranteeing it's going to work. So Microsoft's going full ecosystem. It's just like, we want you in our garden. Just come play in our garden, and we'll let you play however you want in our garden. So I'm really curious to see how it shakes out. 2020 is hopefully going to be the start of I hope the redemption story of Xbox, because, you know, it's been a tough go, but I think that Phil Spencer and the Xbox executive team have been doing everything, not just saying the right things, but doing the right things. As far as, you know, we talked the stuff we've all been talking about for the last 10 minutes of Game Pass and of backward compatibility and all access and all these various things. So, you know, they're doing the right things. Now they just have to deliver the games.
Sure.
It's as simple as that. As simple and complex.
Okay, let's move on to our next platform. That's from Mega Man X.
Nicely done.
Let's determine who's going to go next. We still have to hear from PlayStation and Nintendo.
Can we just flip a coin now? Since
I have to
Does
lower
anyone actually that's have coins?
I have just, to lower the random number generator to between 1 and 2. Let's see. The next platform will be number 2.
All right.
We go to Nintendo. Let me fade out Mega Man X here. Okay, Casey. Was 2020 a good year to own a Nintendo Switch?
2019 was an amazing year.
Sorry.
I don't know about 2020, but...
Before we get to 2020, let's talk about 2019 first. Was 2019 a good year to own a Nintendo Switch?
I have to say 2019 was an amazing year to own the Nintendo Switch. I don't know if you guys can see this piece of paper I have in front of me, but there's a huge list. I don't know. There are 15 exclusives, and there are also 4 console exclusives. They came out for PC, but also only for Switch. I don't generally play on the PC, so to me, that's a console exclusive.
Okay.
But there were a ton of really great games, all that we scored above an 8. There was Fire Emblem Three Houses, which I know are some people in the office game of the year.
Sure.
I think it's mine. And I mean, I play on the PS4 as well. And I don't, do you want me to go through this list of exclusive games?
So, I mean, and we can just rattle, you know, these off. Let's just, Nintendo Switch had the best year in terms of exclusives. They had the strongest exclusive lineup beginning, you know, right in the beginning of the year. New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe. Then they had got Tetris 99, which is a really cool surprise. Mm-hmm. Nothing like that on other platforms. Yoshi's Crafted World, Cadence of Hyrule, Mario Maker 2, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, Astral Chain, Fire Emblem, Link's Awakening, Luigi's Mansion 3, and Pokemon.
And Ring Fit Adventure.
And also Ring Fit Adventure.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's a great game. I really like that game. Yeah. We also got SteamWorld Quest, My Friend Pedro, Katana Zero, and Ape Out, which were also on the PC. Oh, and Untitled Goose Game.
Yes.
Yep.
So if you only play on consoles, the Switch would be the way to play those games.
Yeah.
Honestly, there were so many games that came out on the Switch that I could not even play them all. Like Luigi's Mansion 3, I haven't played yet. I know Ryan.
Oh, it's so good.
was able to review it.
I will play co-op with you when you're ready to go. It's so much fun.
I'm looking forward to playing it over the Christmas break because we'll have plenty of time then. And I know you also enjoyed Ring Fit Adventure. I know we talk about it a lot, even though it sounds like such a small, silly little thing to get excited about. But I think it's a really good experience. And we also got some more NES games and SNES games for the Nintendo Switch Online service and expanded it even more. We also got a new Switch model with extra battery life and the Nintendo Switch Lite that also expanded its battery life. It was a great game. It was a great year to own a Switch. You also got Divinity Original Sin 2 Definitive Edition. If you haven't been able to play that yet.
Amazing that the game is on the Switch.
Yeah, it's crazy. And The Witcher 3. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of games that are... It's just the part of the bring everything to Switch initiative, right?
And it's working.
Pets. So you've got this great lineup of exclusives and then a growing library of smaller indie games. It's almost like a portable Steam machine now in some ways. But what about that third-party support of like other like AAA games that you also see on PlayStation and Xbox? We got Mortal Kombat 11 this year. Like you mentioned, we got Witcher 3. Let's see what else. Wolfenstein Youngblood came to the Switch this year. Capcom is putting out seemingly its entire back catalog of games onto the Switch. But as we go, like in a game like Witcher 3, it's cool that it's on Switch, but it's not the same experience.
It's the best way to play those games. It's cool that it's there.
But it's the only way to play it portably.
Play it portably, but not the overall best way. And that's kind of seems to be like the through line of all these third-party ports. And as time goes on, it's going to be even harder and harder to get those ports to the Switch, right?
It happened even with a game that I didn't expect it to. Bloodstained was something I was very much looking forward to playing on the Switch. And it just, watching you play it on the PS4 in the office just blew my mind.
She's looking at me.
Yeah. After playing it on the Switch and then coming to the office and seeing Damon play Bloodstained.
So you played on the Switch first and that was like your baseline?
Yeah. And when I played it, I was like, oh, this is fine. And then I came in and saw the PS4 version and I didn't want to play it on my Switch anymore because it looked that much better. And unfortunately, I think that is the case for a lot of these third-party ports where it just doesn't look or run as well on the Switch as others. Alien Isolation, oddly,
that's just how it
runs. Looks better,
really good
runs
on the
better.
Switch.
It looks better. Apparently, there was a Digital Foundry report.
And the YouTube, the title of the video is something like Nintendo Switch version looks better than PS4, which doesn't happen.
Yeah,
but it did for that game. Yeah,
that seems odd.
We did get one really big third-party exclusive that I did not expect, which was Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, The Black Order. Awesome exclusive to have, but it's really suited for the Nintendo Switch because, again, it is family-oriented in multiplayer co-op.
This year, this is a thing that I keep telling Lucy O'Brien I'm going to write as an op-ed, but I thought this year Nintendo was so quietly great at being an amazing co-op publisher and developer because so many of their exclusives, whether it was New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe or Yoshi's Crafted World, or even they added a major update to Captain Toad Treasure Tracker as free DLC, plus Marvel Ultimate Alliance and Luigi's Mansion, all of it's co-op, and that's amazing to just have in some of the biggest games of the year.
Yeah. So with an exclusive lineup this strong and a constant flood of great indie games always pumping in, would you agree that the third-party support is less important for the Switch, for third-party AAA support?
Yes. I assume most people who get the Nintendo console are getting a Nintendo console for the Nintendo-published games, like Zelda and your Marios and Yoshis and we have plenty of that. And it was an especially strong year if you liked like Japanese RPGs with like Pokemon and Fire Emblem. Mm-hmm. And to not have those other third-party games and support that the PlayStation and Xbox have, I think are fine. Mm-hmm. But there's also a reason why I have both.
Yeah, sure.
So like, you can't play Monster Hunter on the Nintendo Switch, like Monster Hunter World anyway.
Well, a couple weeks ago over Thanksgiving week, Nintendo announced that the Switch had its best week ever in the US in terms of sales.
And the UK.
And the UK.
I think it shot up by 30% over the week of Thanksgiving. No, actually the week that Pokemon came out, it shot up by 30%.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think that's because, how much does Pokemon have to do with that and also the Nintendo Switch Lite?
Pokemon is a system seller. It just always has been. And I don't think that the increase was a coincidence that it was right around when Pokemon came out. There really weren't that many great Switch deals on Black Friday. I mean, Walmart had one where you could get a case, and they also had one where you got Spyro bundled in for the price. But the Nintendo deals that came with Mario Kart 8 was actually with the old Switch, so it wasn't even a good bundle. Hmm. And by old Switch, I mean the Nintendo Switch that had like the first run that had shorter battery life. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say a lot of that is Pokemon and maybe the Switch Lite, but the thing is the Switch Lite, the regular sales, not including the Switch Lite, is what shot up by 30% when Pokemon came out.
Okay.
there are a lot of factors, so it's impossible to really say, but...
Now, so obviously a really great lineup of games to play on your Switch. In terms of services, though, as is typically the case with Nintendo, I think they're lagging pretty far behind their competitors.
Yeah. Right. I opened up the Nintendo Switch Online app for the first time this year, and I was really surprised to see that there's literally nothing on that app. You can't do anything. You can't add your friends. You can't see who's playing. It's literally just companion apps for like Smash and Splatoon.
I forgot it existed.
Yeah,
until you just said it.
Yeah, I spent $20 to renew it, and I'm not sure why.
Well, yeah,
I just let it auto renew. I was just gonna say there was a great deal from Twitch Prime earlier this year. Where basically, if you linked your accounts, you could get a free year.
Yeah,
yeah, I did that as well. Yeah. And before that, I just had a family plan where I shared it with I'm on a family plan with a bunch of people who are my friends, who I consider my family. but I mean, it does allow you to go online with, for example, Smash Bros. And for Pokemon, you needed to play ranked battles and to also play with other people online for max raid battles, which is important if you don't have people sitting right next to you to play co-op with. And of course, a lot of people don't need that extra connectivity. But I mean, someone like me, like I really like doing surprise trades and I really like doing ranked battles and being able to do tournaments with my friends on the other side of the country. So that online support is important to me. And it is significantly less expensive than Xbox Live and PS Online. So, and it comes with all the SNES and NES games.
There is that, which is cool. They added the SNES games this year, but then that also ended the monthly updates of new games.
We are getting more on December 12th.
We are getting a few more Super Nintendo games.
A couple more, like Star Fox 2. Hey. The best Star Fox. No, I'm kidding.
That's at least a very unique oddity in Nintendo's history.
Exactly.
But Nintendo's sitting on just, you know, the greatest back catalog of games in the world, and they're still being very, very slow to dole out new games to their online catalog.
They do the online versions of these SNES and NES games do have the benefit of having a few extra functions, like the rewind function, which lets you just pick up from, like, if you die or mess up, you can just pick up back from where you left off. And I know Legend of Zelda has a special edition, which starts you off with a bunch of items. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these games aren't just direct ports. There are some extra things here and there that are considered an upgrade.
Yeah, that's true. And then I think the Nintendo Switch eShop, I think everyone agrees, just is in dire need of some modernization.
So yeah.
It's just the bare bones online store. It's hard to discover anything worthwhile. There's like shovelware that's discounted to 99 cents that's always at the top of the bestsellers charts. It's like nobody wants to see
There was an amazing story of how devs have figured out how to game the eShop by doing that, by putting their game down to like 11 cents.
Yeah,
because once you are out of the initial page of new releases, unless you are a like major game Nintendo's keeping an eye on, you're never seen again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I usually sort, if I'm looking for something new to play, I sort by demos, download the demos, and then see if I like any of those. So that also kind of, if a game doesn't have a demo, it's very unlikely I will see it unless, like Jonathan said, I just happen to look at the eShop for new releases that week.
Yeah.
Or if I'm constantly looking at games coming out this week for NVC. But if I wasn't doing that, I would have no idea what was coming out. And we still sometimes miss releases just because there are so many indie games coming out. Sometimes it's difficult to know what is worth looking at or not. And luckily, like, we have Tom Marks on the show who just has played everything that's ever been on Steam. So he
directs
us in a good way.
Yeah.
But without that, it would be difficult finding anything worthwhile.
All right, so the Switch had an incredible lineup of exclusives in 2019. It's the only way to play a lot of third-party games portably. It's almost 3 years old now. The system is almost 3 years old now. I think any doubts about it or any presumptions about it being a fad are far in the rearview mirror. But how does 2020 look for Nintendo as the other two platforms are starting to launch a next generation of their systems? What does that mean for Nintendo and the Switch?
Man, Nintendo is always behind when it comes to console generations, since the Wii U, really. And it's going to become more and more difficult to get other third-party games that are coming to PlayStation and Xbox on the Nintendo. And I'm already kind of worried about... I always mix these up, and I'm so sorry, but Outer Worlds and Outer Wilds. Mm-hmm. The one coming to Switch is Outer Worlds.
Yes.
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 Yeah.
The Outer Worlds.
Obsidian RPG.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Outer Worlds. we have a Discord channel for our Wikis freelancers. It's like Outer Worlds, not Outer Wilds. People don't make that mistake.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid of what that's going to look like next year. I mean, I'm excited that it's coming because so many people are loving it. But I don't think it'll be the best place to play it. And I just hope that Nintendo keeps coming out with first party and Nintendo published games that are made for the Switch. And that's really the only thing we can hope for. But 2020 isn't looking nearly as stacked as 2018. Hmm. I mean, we're getting Tokyo...
18 or 19.
Doesn't look nearly as good as 2019. 2020 does not look as good as 2019. Huh. Years. But Tokyo Mirage Sessions, FE Encore is coming. But that's a Wii U port.
Yeah.
And it's the English edition, so it's censored. But I know a lot of Japanese players are upset about. We're also getting another remastered edition of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. Animal Crossing New Horizons.
That's a big one.
Is a big one.
Yeah.
But other than Animal Crossing New Horizons, we might be getting No More Heroes 3. We might be getting Bayonetta 3. We might be getting Breath of the Wild 2. And then that's kind of it.
There's also Metroid Prime 4.
But there's no way that's coming out next year.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask.
They rebooted development earlier this year. Hmm. So
I don't know. I guess it's something that we've talked about on NBC quite a bit, but there are no hopes in that room that Metroid Prime 4 is coming out in 2020.
Gotcha.
And it would be awesome if we were wrong.
Sure.
And it did.
Yeah, sure.
But I just don't see it coming out next year.
I think Breath of the Wild 2, or whatever that sequel's called, I think there's a good chance. Because that'll be, like we said, that'll be 3 years old.
They almost.
Already got their engine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that being...
Oh, no, you're right.
Spring 2020.
Three and a half years.
Yeah.
Three and a half. Yeah, so you're totally right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I could see that being the big fall release.
But they were working on the Champions DLC after that.
Mm.
The release of Breath of the Wild. My bet right now for Breath of the Wild 2 is 2021.
Mm.
So then we also might get a third version of Pokemon Sword and Shield.
Yeah.
Which is generally how it goes, but we didn't get a third version of X and Y, though people can argue that Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire were that, but that was a remake. I mean, it's not the same thing exactly, but man, I don't know. We are also like probably getting Gods and Monsters, but that's not an exclusive.
That's the Ubisoft game?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would really like Mario and Rabbids 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would be nice. I would also, don't at me, I would also like a remake of Super Mario Sunshine.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would like that.
I would love that, please.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we're all waiting for the like constantly rumored Metroid Prime trilogy. Like that would be a great thing to add, especially while we're waiting for MP4. And then my beloved Pikmin have disappeared from the face of the planet, and I miss them so much.
Miyamoto hath forsaken you.
Free them. Free the Pikmin.
I did forget one more Switch exclusive, I think is a Switch exclusive, but Rune Factory 5. Rune Factory was like a Harvest Moon dungeon crawler game that was out for the 3DS, or actually the regular DS is when it first came out, but they came out with a remastered edition of 4 last year, and that was a series I really liked. It was super anime, but it was also... right up my alley.
Sure. I've been wanting a Mario Galaxy HD bundle for a long time. Oh, put them both together in one package.
I'd be all about that.
Yeah, for sure.
There are just so many things that Nintendo could re-release on Switch, which would give it new legs and new life and a whole new audience to play.
Like, yeah.
There were so many people who missed the Wii U entirely.
Yep. Yeah. Wind Waker HD, Twilight Princess HD.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I skipped it voluntarily. It just never, like, so, and I know that there, of course, there were good games on it.
3D
so,
World is such a good Mario.
I would love to have those on Switch on a system I do care about.
Mm-hmm. Also, smaller games, the NES Remix games.
Yes, those are great.
It's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Is there any reason to hope for upgraded hardware from Nintendo in 2020? A more powerful version of the Switch.
I would like one. I don't know if that means we're going to get one. I know Nintendo has repeatedly said they are not working on a Switch Pro. Maybe that means they weren't currently working on one literally right then, but maybe there were plans to do it in the future. But I would hope that they put out a stronger version of the Switch sometime in the fall next year to try and keep up with the next rendition of the PlayStation and Xbox, but Nintendo has also never done that except with the 3DS. And I think that's a little different than launching an upgraded system, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So,
I mean, Nintendo has clearly seen that people like to play in handheld mode because, of course, the Switch Lite can't be docked. Mm-hmm. So give me a Switch Pro with like a really nice improved screen and then some better battery life, a little faster processor, and run things in a little higher resolution. Yeah. I would happily give them more money.
Same.
Yeah, I know some game devs who are making games specifically for the Switch have to worry about battery life, and so hold back on graphics and other things like that specifically so it doesn't kill the Switch battery. And it would be cool if they didn't have to do that as much.
Sure. And we should point out that we're actually recording this before the Nintendo Direct this week.
Yes,
that's coming tomorrow. We're recording this on Monday, so
when is this coming out?
As soon as I can get it done. I don't know, maybe tomorrow sometime.
And before the Game Awards, where they've often...
Before the Game Awards. Yeah. So if there's anything from those presentations that we didn't talk about here, that's why.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, that brings us to our final platform to discuss for 2019. But, and out of fairness,
Roll the dice. Let's see what happens. Yeah.
Xbox didn't get a Mega Man song. What the hell? Xbox is always getting shortchanged.
You got the theme song.
Shortchanged by the media.
Random.org brought us the number one.
Ah, damn it.
Okay. And that means you're up, Jonathan. PlayStation 4.
The clear
leader in sales for this
generation. Over 100 million units sold this
year. Not in this year.
No, not in this year, but in total.
Yes. Crossed the 100 million mark this year. Outsold the Wii, I think, now?
It got a Guinness Book of World Record.
Well, the PlayStation entire console family. So, like, all generations of PlayStation have cumulatively sold the most of any brand.
Did you notice that was conveniently tied to the PR beat of the 25th anniversary of PlayStation? Yeah. What a coincidence.
I know. It's wild, right?
I think the PlayStation 4 is now officially the second best-selling home console after the PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Which will be really tough to catch up to. So, the question is, was 2019 a good year to own a PlayStation 4?
I would say it was a good, interesting year. I don't think it was the year we wanted.
Hard to top 2018.
Yeah, 2018 delivered two of the best games on the PS4 exclusive-wise, and just in general with Spider-Man and God of War. And it's very, very hard to top those two games in any way, regardless of where the games are coming from. Mm-hmm. I think Sony's first-party output and exclusive output this year in 2019 was eclectic, to say the least, and not everything worked or connected, especially with us here at IGN. I know some things connected more with the audiences at home, but I would say a lot of the smaller things they tried or the more unique things they tried were really interesting, and I wish had gotten a little more spotlight than they did.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about those exclusives. We got Death Stranding earlier in the year.
Yeah.
I think that was, you know, we weren't crazy about it, but definitely I think there's some... It has its fans.
Yeah, I'm a fan of it.
Its defenders,
yeah. I've played 55 hours so far.
Wow, okay, there you go.
I'm still enjoying it. We had Death Stranding as sort of the end year capper earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. Days Gone from Bend Studio, which had been revealed a couple years ago. We gave it, I believe, a 6 from Lucy. They've been really great. Bend's been really good about supporting that game post-launch with a lot of technical patches that have improved the performance of the game and a lot of fun sort of wacky post-game challenges thrown in there. Mm-hmm. But that didn't quite, I think, set our world on fire as much as we wanted it to. However, they did have Dreams started in early access earlier this year, which is Media Molecule, the developers of Little Big Planet's follow-up game that has been Andrew Goldfarb, our old executive news editor, and I used to joke every year together. Rest in peace, Andrew. Used to joke every year we would have to write like two stories, and it was always Dreams delayed to next year and Dreams beta delayed to next year. But we finally got Dreams in early access.
And it's amazing.
And it's incredible. The things people are putting in that game are mind-blowing. And of course, you get, you know, silly like Final Fantasy VII remakes before the remake is even out that are impressive. But then you also get people making giant kaiju games and crazy trivia games and wacky short stories and videos and everything. It's incredible what people are putting together with that. We also had MLB The Show, which continued to be great. I know this year's was really well respected and received. I'm not a baseballman myself, but I know people loved it out
there.
Ryan
can vouch for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That studio, San Diego, is just every year quietly makes a better and better baseball game. They did a great job this year.
Yeah. And then a small one that's very close to my heart, Concrete Genie, mm-hmm. which I thought was beautifully artistic, ambitious for its size. It was made by the smallest, I think, first-party Sony team, Pixel Opus. It's only like 16 or so people, very small team, but very cool project. And then we had a couple interesting PSVR games like Blood and Truth, which is basically puts you in the middle of a Mission Impossible movie. And it's a really fun, crazy, wacky action experience. So nothing on the scale or grandeur of Spider-Man or God of War, but I think the things that did work were really interesting and worked really well. And I'm glad that they are part of the Sony first party.
Yeah, I think you could actually argue with a straight face that Microsoft had an exclusive this year that was better than any.
That's what I said at
any
the top
Sony
of the
exclusive.
Ryan, that is a great point. but no, yeah, I think it's hard, especially when some of those have been a bit more divisive, critically and with the public at large. But yeah, so their smaller games, I think, were great. They just obviously were smaller and didn't necessarily give us those experiences that we had last year.
And then the PS4's third-party lineup, I think, had parity with the Xbox lineup this year, right? There's no like big third party exclusives.
Were there any kind of big Neo 2s or other third party exclusives?
Not that's coming to mind right now. I might be forgetting one or two, but yeah, it was pretty much parody, I think, this year. Control, RE2 Remake, The Outer Worlds,
Sekiro, DMC5.
Yeah, pretty much all of them were, you know, we'll get things like the Call of Duty Modern Warfare DLC will come first to PlayStation, things like that. But on the whole, PlayStation stuff, outside of some PSVR titles, obviously, there's nothing really that differentiated the third-party lineup from Xbox this year.
And then I think in terms of services, Sony made PlayStation Now really appealing.
They made PlayStation Now more appealing and PlayStation Plus worse.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It's a kind of weird year for Sony on services and just at a corporate level and how things are changing. We did get big interface changes. Some of the, I think at the end of last year, they started talking about name changes, crossplay finally becoming a thing across PlayStation and Xbox. Those sorts of services started to finally come into the ecosystem of PlayStation. But this year, PlayStation Now, which is essentially their attempt at a streaming service, which has been around for a few years, it got a major price cut. So I think each month is now only $9.99 a month.
Yeah.
And you get a huge library of PS4, PS3, and PS2 games. PS4 games and some PS4 and some PS2 games are now downloadable so you can play offline. You don't have to be online streaming. And they're adding rotating major exclusives to that library. So God of War is currently available as a PlayStation Now title. So you can subscribe to PlayStation Now for a month, play God of War for $10, and then you know, dip if you want to get out of that service. But they'll rotate in games in and out of that, big games like Uncharted and Persona 5 and stuff like that. But conversely, PlayStation Plus got worse where...
Why do you say that?
Well, so in the beginning of this year, I think it was March, they had announced this a year ago, so we were all prepared, but then it finally hit. The PlayStation Plus free game monthly lineup dwindled from 6 to 2 games. Mm-hmm. So it used to be normally every month, 2 PS4 games, 2 PS3 games, and 2 Vita games. And now it is just 2 PS4 games with occasional things thrown in there. Obviously, the PS3 audience at this point in time and
the Vita,
audience are much smaller than the 100 million people playing a PS4.
Yeah.
But a lot of those games are often cross-play, so PS4 players were really getting 3 to 4 games per month. Mm. It allowed for a lot of varied additions to the library. So, you know, you might... The AAA games for the PS4 might not be the ones you wanted, but usually a game for the Vita that was cross-play with PS4 might be really interesting to try. Mm. There was a lot more chance that you could get great games or at least have something that might pique your interest, where now there are only 2 games per month, and if you don't like them, those 2 games don't matter for the month.
Like for me, there just hasn't been very many PlayStation Plus games that were interesting to me this year. So every month I like check to see what's there, and it's like, yeah.
I mean, this month for December, it's I forget what the second game
Neo's
is.
Neo's on there.
Titanfall 2.
Yeah. Or maybe Neo was
Neo last was last month. Month. Okay, gotcha.
Titanfall 2
is
awesome.
Titanfall 2 is great. And definitely a lot of people missed out on that one. But normally it'll come sometimes with a sports game, which obviously appeals to a wide audience. But for someone who's maybe looking for, you know, a single player adventure to dive into or a fun couch co-op game, those games were much more frequently part of the PlayStation Plus library, and now they're not. And they didn't add anything on top of that, like other free games. I've been beating this drum on Beyond every month. I wish they would add even one PSVR game a month to that lineup, because even if you don't own PSVR, if you get to the end of a year and you've downloaded 12 free PSVR games,
and then you buy it,
and it's for sale on Black Friday, there have been amazing Black Friday PSVR sales.
Yeah.
You have 12 games to play, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
And it just seems crazy that they haven't done that.
You're really making it sound like I'm missing out for not having a PSVR headset.
I think the last year, if you include the second half of 2018, has been an amazing year for PSVR. It's definitely continued to sell well.
Astrobot was last
year. Astrobot and Tetris Effect were last year. Oh. And Beat Saber were all last year at the end of the year for PSVR. You've got stuff like Blood and Truth this year, Trover Saves the Universe, which is on other platforms as well. There's just been a huge library. I was not a believer in PSVR, you know, at the beginning of 2018. And then by the end of it, I was playing it. It was the most played thing I'd had of the year because I was so in every game I played on that had a unique, different experience that I couldn't play anywhere else.
Yeah, Sony seems really dedicated to the PSVR platform. They're much more serious about it, about supporting it, than some of their other hardware peripheral initiatives like the motion controllers.
Yeah, like the Move controllers, which you now use for PSVR.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. They have said
Wonderbook. Wonderbook.
Oh, Wonderbook was a thing. Yeah. Yeah, they had J.K. Rowling on stage for like 2 minutes at E3. Yeah. They have said PSVR, the current headset and all games will be. So the PSVR headset will be supported on the PS5. Hmm. So one, that makes me think PSVR 2 is not coming next year, but that also means, hey, if you want to buy into PSVR now, it's not going to suddenly die next year.
Ryan and Casey, do you feel like VR is an advantage PlayStation has over Xbox and Nintendo? I know Nintendo's sort of experimenting.
Yeah, we have Nintendo Labo. We don't need a real headset. We have cardboard. Yeah. Ours is recyclable.
It's true. Yeah.
We care about the environment. No, I think it's a great advantage that PlayStation has.
I mean, the numbers are tough, right? Like, I think it's the number I saw was like 4 million is the installed base.
I think it's around 5 or 6 maybe by now. Yeah, it's roughly like a tenth of the PS4.
That's 5 or 6%.
Or a 20th. Yeah, 20th, excuse me.
Yeah, 5 or 6%. And I mean, for me, like, I've got a PS4, but I also have a PC. I have not, there's not been enough of a swell of games to make me want to spend the money on the hardware. Now, granted, I'm very lucky. I work here. I have access to all that stuff, which probably helps a lot, because if there is something, I can take a look at it. But, you know, I don't know if there even can be a killer app for VR at this point. I mean, I would say with PSVR, the price is nice and low now, which is one of the things that was slowing me down on VR, is like $400. Like, no, not. But the conversely, compared to the Oculus, especially the Rift S and the Index, the PSVR is really old and creaky now. Like, when you put that headset on, like, you can tell it's not as technically capable of an experience.
Fidelity-wise, yeah, it's definitely not up there. I would still say it's one of the most comfortable headsets, which is not nothing.
Yeah, they've got the ergonomics, but also, I mean, the Move controllers are definitively worse than the touch controllers.
Absolutely.
So it's such a tricky place. Like, if Sony goes, I mean, I don't pretend to know what's best for their business, but it's like, I wonder if now, if they see the numbers of, well, only 5 or 6% of our audience bought into this, so maybe we should make a $500 PSVR 2 and go for a more premium experience if only 5% of people are going to go for it anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, there's an interesting argument to be made there. But overall, no, I don't think Microsoft has suffered, or Xbox has suffered, for a lack of VR, and Phil Spencer's already very publicly said it's, you know, we're not ruling it out for the future, but it's just not, we're just not focusing on this for right now.
Yeah,
I think it's hard to argue against him on that.
I think the VR question for PS5 and just going forward with PlayStation is really what they want it to be as part of their corporation. Like, if they do want it to be something that is mass adopted by PS4 and PS5 players, it needs a lower price. It probably needs, you know, less powerful tech to be able to get that lower price. But if they're okay with it being a boutique thing that only goes to 5% of the marketplace, I'm fine if PSVR 2 really bumps things up and is a bit of a premium, but can stand with parity with the rest of the VR.
I would love that. I mean, sector. Batman Arkham VR, which was a day one launch title for PSVR, is still one of my favorite VR experiences.
So,
I mean,
cool.
It's a relatively simple thing as far as the sort of the gameplay experience, but it made me feel like Batman. As cheesy and marketing as that sounds, like, you look in the mirror as you're going down you feel like you're kind of going down the lift to the Batcave, and you put the cape and cowl on.
When you put the cowl on,
and then the detective stuff where you're just in, like, it's good games. I would love to get an Arkham VR 2 for PSVR.
Cut to Rocksteady at the Game Awards. You've all been waiting 5 years.
I mean, maybe that shouldn't be.
I'm kidding.
But it would be great to get on. But yeah, that's like, I so appreciate that PSVR exists and is still supported in a healthy, active way by Sony. Even if I don't own one, and I feel like it's a kind of inferior technical experience to the PC ones, it's just great to see that. They are just making games and trying stuff, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Jonathan, do you think it was a mistake for Sony to skip E3?
No.
Okay.
I don't think it was a mistake for Sony to skip E3 or even skip PSX last year. They ended up not doing one at the end of December. One, it got us talking about them all the time around E3 because we were like, what's PlayStation going to do? Where are they going to make their move? And they did, they introduced State of Play this year and tried that as a new format. And they did one a couple weeks before E3 and essentially got to start the conversation of E3 a week before it because they had the Final Fantasy VII remake re-reveal after years of that game being out of, you know, the discussion. They, not being at E3, especially when this was such a down E3 year, I think they would have just been wrapped up in that discussion. And the thing about Sony, they've had amazing E3s. I think it's hard to top some of their past E3 conferences of 2015, 2016. But if they had come to E3 again, they weren't going to show their full hand with PS5. And then that means we would have got a retread of Death Stranding and The Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima, which has been what they've shown as highlights for the last 2 years at conferences. And I think they realized doing this again for a third year in a row would just make players impatient.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Will they be at E3 2020?
I don't know. I'm inclined to say yes. But with a new console coming, I think, and so many big third parties obviously playing toward the PS5 and Scarlet, it'd be crazy not to be there and be part of that whole discussion. But Sony has shown for the last year that they kind of want to do things the way they want to do them and not necessarily play by the rest of the industry's rules. And we've seen a big change in leadership over there. Yeah. Sean Layden left Worldwide Studios and Herman Hulst, who was previously the director at Guerrilla Games, who made Horizon, is now the head of Worldwide Studios, with Shuhei Yoshida stepping into a new role focused on independent games and getting them to come to PlayStation more. So we're seeing a change in the organization there. Obviously, Jim Ryan is still there at the top, so he may be calling the shots on what they want to do with that. But I wouldn't be shocked if Sony wants to stick to the beat of their own drum and do their own shows throughout the year.
We talked earlier about how it was always going to be hard to top 2018.
Yes.
But maybe 2020 could?
It's possible.
You've got Last of Us Part 2.
You've got Last of Us Part 2, which unfortunately got a bit of a delay, but that's expected with Naughty Dog because they will not rush a game. They will delay a game compromise. No matter what. And I got to play 2.5 hours or so of it and was thrilled by it as The Last of Us is one of my favorite games of all time. So obviously, that comes with a lot of expectations, but it's super exciting. And then we're also getting Ghost of Tsushima on the first party front, which
we hope so.
We hope. That's my guess. To be fair, it doesn't have a 2020 release date. It has no release date at all. It's still been said it's coming to PS4. So common sense would suggest it's coming.
I still think it's a PS5 day one launch title, and there will also be a PS4 version of it. But I think it's going to be pushed as a PS5 day one launch title.
Yeah. It's we really haven't seen much of that game beyond 2018's E3 and when it premiered at, I think, Paris Games Week 2017. We've seen very little of that game, and it's Sucker Punch's first full major game since Infamous Second Son and First Light, the DLC for that. So it's been several years since a really great first-party studio has shown anything. I know there are a lot of people who are hugely anticipating it in the PlayStation crowd here in the office, but it is a huge question mark of, when are we going to see more of that game?
Yeah. Well, we are, like Ryan just mentioned, we also are getting the PlayStation 5.
Yes, we're getting the
holiday
PS5. And if I may, this is not nearly a PS5, but I do want to shout it out because it looked really cool when I saw it at PAX. Predator Hunting Grounds, which was shown in the State of Play. It's being made by the Friday the 13th devs. As far as we know, it's a PS4 exclusive, at least at first. And basically, it's a 4v1 asymmetrical multiplayer game where you're playing as the Predator versus four human soldiers, and it's essentially the humans are racing to a certain target and the Predator's trying to kill them. It's pretty fun.
Friday the 13th got shut down like for licensing stuff, right?
So
that's an awesome pivot by that developer.
Yeah.
Just be like, okay, well, what else would fit this?
Yeah.
Oh, Predator. That's so good.
Hopefully they don't lose that license as well.
Yeah, hopefully not. Especially with the whole Fox Disney change around. But so that's just coming earlier in the year too. I just wanted to shout that one out. The end of the year is PS5. We're going into next year. They've talked about the PS5 mostly in blog posts and interviews with Wired and you know, things of that nature, not really at a press conference. Every State of Play now comes with the disclaimer. It's funny because they're always like, and we shouldn't have to mention this, or like, you might have guessed already, there's no PS5 updates. And I'm like, no, people want that. They're probably expecting that. But State of Plays have not shown anything PS5 wise, but we do know they're calling it PlayStation 5. We know dev kits seem to reportedly be out there in the wild, and they have a V shape that people are freaking out about, but it's not going to be the final console design because that's not how dev kits work. But we know it's a PS5. We know some of the additions that are being made to the controller. We don't know what most studios are working on for it. We could probably pretty safely guess based on sales of this generation. But for the most part, Sony's played the PS5 cards very close to their chest right now.
Yeah. Well, I think 2020 is going to be a very exciting year, hopefully for all platforms. I don't know. What do you guys think? I don't think there's a clear winner or loser in 2019. I think Nintendo Switch had the best exclusives, but that platform obviously has its own limitations. And then either whether you're playing on a PlayStation 4 or Xbox, you have basically the same library of excellent third-party games. You know,
I mean, you know, I've been gaming long enough and doing this long enough. It's the cycle. Things do go in cycles. Like,
yeah, sure.
You know, you've got people look back like 2007, a legendary year. And you get these 1998 was another one. And I actually think 2020 could very well be one of those like all time great
a 2007
years between The Last of Us Part Two. And hopefully Halo Infinite's going to return Halo to, you know, top tier greatness, and Cyberpunk and Doom Eternal and
Animal Crossing.
Absolutely. But there's already this like kind of mile long list of big deal. Oh, and Half-Life Alyx, as you know, even if you don't have a VR headset, a new Half-Life game
is
so
real.
Yeah, it's like 2020 is, you know, it's just everybody kind of goes. It's in these cycles where like 2018. A lot of people shipped, like Rockstar shipped Red Dead and Santa Monica shipped God of War and Insomniac shipped Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to be quiet for a while.
Yeah. And this year, just to mention on the PlayStation side, Insomniac became an official first party of Sony after, you know, years of a close relationship. Sometimes Insomniac tried some other things, dated around for a little bit, but then came back to Sony and now is officially a first party studio. And obviously, you know, Spider-Man 2 is all but certain, the same way God of War 2 is all but certain.
I'm very excited for God of War 2.
Yeah. Or God of War 5, depending on your number.
Well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I know.
This year reminded me a lot of 2014, where our game of the year that year was Dragon Age Inquisition, which I didn't vote for. I voted for Sunset Overdrive, which is, but again, like there wasn't, 2014 was a year where, I mean, every year there are a lot of very good games.
Sure.
But there just wasn't that sort of like premier masterpiece level front running, this was the cream of the crop kind of game. And I don't think we got that this year.
I think this year let a lot of smaller games as a result shine.
Yes.
And you can see that in our Game of the Year nominees, things like Slay the Spire, Disco Elysium, Untitled Goose Game on the Switch for like best Switch game and things of that nature. There were so many games across all the platforms and PC that probably wouldn't have gotten as much attention from us or just from audiences because of the, you know, not necessarily lack of great AAA games, but we didn't have, like you said, that sort of like masterpiece that was the shining example for the year.
And a lot of the games that were very well critically reviewed were kind of niche titles, like Fire Emblem Three Houses. You're not going to have everyone clamoring to play a like tactics JRPG. So, and something like Control, a lot of my colleagues liked, but it's not like really my type of game. So I didn't enjoy it as much as everyone else did. And I think we just got a lot of more niche games that will really, really appeal to a small group of people. But as you guys said, there wasn't one game that everyone universally looks at as a masterpiece.
Yeah. Okay. Before we go, if you guys are game, I think we'll play a round of video game 20 questions.
Here we go.
When we did this last year, I was trying to take this format a little more seriously than we normally do, and we didn't play it, and then all the listeners were like, man, I wanted to hear this different group of people play. So we'll play video game 20 questions this year, which brings us to video game 20 questions. Suggestion this week comes from Mark in Starbridge, UK. And he has a little note here before we start. He says, I love the show. Haven't missed an episode since 2015. It's time for my annual Video Game 20 Questions suggestion. Last year, I stumped the panel with my first suggestion, Life is Strange.
Ooh.
Okay.
And now he's back again.
All right.
Life is Strange.
He's going to stump us even more by going with something totally out of that genre.
So he's British, and last year he chose a European developed game. So I'm already, I'm on to your games.
Which Rare game should we
So with that, let the questioning begin.
Casey, do you want to get us started?
You go for it.
All right, so let's start. Was this game released after the year 2000?
Yes.
Okay. Was this game released after the year 2010?
Yes.
Ooh.
Okay.
Is it a European developed game?
I think so.
All right.
Pretty sure.
Okay, so let's see. Is this game exclusive to any platform?
No.
Okay. So that'll rule out a lot of Nintendo games.
Yeah.
But possibly European developed.
I think so.
Is this game 3D?
It has objects rendered in 3D, but you only move on a 2D plane.
Okay, well, all right, we are narrowing it.
Hold on.
Okay, so that's five. Like already I'm thinking like Inside, because they're a European developer.
True. Recency bias, Platonic's Ukulele and the Apostle Lair.
I mean, yeah, we're kind of opening the whole world.
Yeah. European 2D side-scrollers with 2D elements.
Do you want to ask if it's a platformer or is that...
Do it.
Is it a platformer?
There is platforming. I'm not sure if that's like the...
Okay, so not ukulele.
The one genre box you put it in, but you do platforming.
Inside the...
Probably kills Inside, too.
I mean, you do some...
I would consider that a 2D...
Nobody's saying it's not like purely a platformer, because, it's sort of a physics puzzle platformer.
Yeah. Well, if you want to rule out Inside, you can ask about the color scheme or...
Let's see. Do you play... As a human being for the duration of this video game?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So, all right. So that rules out like ukulele.
Yes.
And also Inside, by the way.
Because,
it could be Limbo, though.
Yeah.
It did come out after 2010.
Yes. It's
2011, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
I'm going to take a stab in the dark at that one. Is this game in black and white?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
It was just on our mind, so I had to know.
Yeah, why not?
Get rid of it.
Okay, so where else?
Possibly European.
Well, what did he said? It's, he said, you move in 2D, but the...
There are like 3D rendered elements.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How about, can you customize your character?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. Let's see. What would... Like, Fez was American and also has no 3D bits.
I mean, technically, because the world flips, but...
But yeah, not European.
Be rendered. Can we phone a friend and ask Borba?
We're not allowed.
and you play as a human.
Yes.
So it's like rare stuff is out.
Yeah.
There's no animal. You don't play as an animal.
And it's not... There's no exclusives.
Should we try to narrow it down by... It is multi-platform, but should we try to narrow between...
Maybe generation.
Generation as well, yeah. Was this released first during the PS3, Xbox 360, Wii U era?
I don't never know where the Wii U fall. It's very nebulous.
The answer is no.
Okay.
Not that generation. And that's 10.
Okay.
So that... It basically means it has to be very recent.
Yes.
Like, meaning this generation.
Yeah, I would assume.
Okay, so... God, we're... See, now I'm freezing up on...
I'm drawing a blank.
On, like, you know, kind of platformy 2D...
Did we go in the wrong direction? Did we ask if it was a side-scroller? Because...
Just that it was 2D, but...
Yeah.
Mark of the Ninja just came to mind, but that's entirely...
No, there's color in that game.
No, but it's entirely 2D. There's no, it's like all hand drawn.
Yeah.
And I think Clay's American.
Yeah, I think
They're not European.
Was this game critically well received?
Yes.
Okay.
I would imagine the bulk of 20 questions games probably are otherwise.
Sometimes not. Trying to think of anything Switch wise. Anything from Devolver. Oh man.
Do you know the answer, Borba? Producer
John Borba.
Our producer in the room thinks he has an idea.
Okay.
They're struggling, so if you want to
If you want to give us a suggestion.
I'm hurting right now.
Is looking at your phone cheating?
He's not on mic. It's fine.
Okay.
Our producer is going to suggest a question. We got to get some
questions. So it's got to be a console game. Especially it's like platformers are never like PC based, really.
Did this come to the Nintendo Switch?
Yes.
Okay.
That narrows it down to like hundreds.
Yeah, but no, it's good to know.
Okay.
Who developed My Friend Pedro?
Because
there are 3D elements in there, but it's 2D. And it's not necessarily a platformer.
You might have something there.
What would be a specific question that would definitely call that out, but still worthwhile? Well, yeah, like, are they bananas?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. that's where my mind went to.
I mean, if it, Do you mind if I ask another?
Go for it.
Oh,
yeah. Does your character primarily use guns in this game? Are guns a weapon in this game?
Yes.
Okay, getting...
It's not wrong.
Yeah.
Shadow Complex comes to mind, but that's it doesn't fit the timeline.
Yeah, yeah.
That's too old, so...
Okay. Just gonna ask it.
Just go for it.
Is there a talking banana in this game?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Is this game My Friend Pedro?
It is.
Nice.
Yeah.
Pedro.
Yeah. You get to hear the all stage clear music. That's Streets of Rage 2. Yeah, My Friend Pedro. I think the developers are British. At least I remember them having a British accent when they were on our E3 show. So I was like, yeah, does everything check
well
out?
Well done.
Yeah.
Nice job.
2D game rendered in 3D. You're jumping around different platforms, but you probably wouldn't call it
a platformer.
Right.
Yeah.
Platformer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And interesting, not out on PS4. Only Switch, Xbox, and PC.
Yeah. Game Pass on Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Nicely job, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Plus,
it is.
Like, if I'm on the panel that doesn't get it right, I just feel like I've completely let the audience down.
You want to
down.
Think, but you don't want there to be silence because you know people are listening.
Right. So now it's a podcast.
You guys as a team have a 100% win rate.
Nice.
I'm never coming back ever again. I'm retiring with a perfect score.
Thanks for coming by GameScoop to talk shop about 2019. And please be excited for all the great new video games and platforms that are coming out in 2020 and all the great hot scoops we'll have for you here on GameScoop. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Casey. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, John. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
I shook you in my dream as hard as I could stand. When I stopped, you fell away. Pockets full of sand. Watching it decay, twitching in the net again, trying to get away. I'm living in between the pleasure and the pain. Emblems glowing in the night and melting in the
try, but I've been Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.